Hi guys, welcome back to the Perpetua podcast. It's your host here, James Rankin, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Mr. Andrew Tracy. Andrew, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. I'm quite excited for this. You were one of the first names I put on my list. I've got a notepad here of people I want to talk to, and there's like yourself and Paul Warrior were right at the top of it, and I've got both of you already, so I'm delighted. Man, tell us a little bit about yourself. The people who don't know you, who are you? I was going to say, what do you do? But maybe just pick one or two of the things that you do and go from there.
I have been for the last 16 years in the fitness industry. Currently, I am the fitness editor at Men's Health Magazine. Have been doing that for a year or so. I worked as a coach for a number of years. I started off in quite a small gym. I had zero interest in fitness before I got this job in the gym. Initially, it was literally just a job. It was just, you know, a minimum wage kind of behind the counter job because I was 16 and I needed beer money. I guess the quickest way to put it is that being in that environment, and this gym was populated in majority by kind of like, I don't want to say bodybuilders, but that was their, you know, they weren't competitive, but some of them were competitive bodybuilders, but it was their style of training. And these were guys that just finished work, you know, as plasterers, as bricklayers, as, you know, whatever it was, and just came to this gym, you know, in the same clothes they worked in and just did hardcore workouts. So that was the environment. And that was kind of what I was raised in. And I always go back and kind of thank that, because it really informed my mindset. I'd never stepped foot in a leisure club or, you know, a health center or a big sort of chain gym. I had no idea that there was this other world where people wore all this, like, you know, like there was a uniform that you had to wear to these places, and there were like brands, and there were special trainers you could get. You know, I just saw these guys who just trained in their work boots, which kind of, later on down the line, really informed and helped me out. And I kind of fell in love with the industry, and I would just read and absorb everything I could, speak to everyone I could, and go down every rabbit hole available, qualified as a trainer, did all the formality stuff. Really, I've actually found one of my first certificates the other day. It was a certificate in anatomy and physiology. I think it's from 2006, maybe.
Oh,
that
wow.
Sound right? Maybe previous to that. Anyway, it was a long time ago. So went from there. I'm from a reasonably sized town just outside of London, and there's this kind of idea of kind of career trajectory, I guess, where that it's a few train stops to central London, so there's this idea of go and get a job in London and you're going to make something of yourself. So I after a few years there, I went and worked in some really great corporate gyms in London. And after a while, kind of working in a few, it really kind of killed my passion for fitness. I was not enjoying it anymore. And it was weird because I was in this situation where I was being offered these like career development courses, these further education. I was in a place where, you know, there were seminars you could go to every single weekend, and I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I didn't like that. I really didn't like that. There were other factors. There were personal factors, but I decided probably 5 or 6 years into coaching, into being a PT, that I wanted to just have a bit of a career break and try something different. And then there were other factors in my life as well. And my dad suggested to me, why don't you just go and do some work in the events industry for a little while, because you'll be traveling, you know, it's going to kind of keep your mind occupied. You're going to be away from home and give yourself a chance. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that for a month, 6 weeks, whatnot. And that was like 10 years ago. anyway, so I kept my toes in the water. I still worked with some remote clients. I still did, a bit of one-to-one coaching whenever I could. And I continued, I carried on writing. And I actually really reignited my kind of love for the fitness industry. And at the time, working in events, events construction. So it's very kind of labor intensive job. And you're traveling the country, you're working from, you know, dusk till dawn. And I kind of had this idea that, well, I can't train anymore. Training's kind of off the cards because I'm up and out like pre 6 a.m. every single morning. And a lot of times, you know, we'd be doing contracts where you might not actually even finish that night. Like you might just work straight through the night because that's the nature of events, you know, you've got to get done. I remember my first ever job in events was at Aintree, the Grand National in Liverpool. Wow. And if it wasn't for the fact I was in Liverpool and it was so far away from home, from Essex, I would have gone home on the first day. Because we started at 6 o'clock in the morning. And my dad had previous to this had worked in events, but he'd worked in entertainment. He'd been on like tour with, you know, like Michael Jackson and done. And it's a very different world. It's very like there's actual hospitality. And my dad was like, don't worry. There'll be catering. You'll have catering on site. So I'm like, cool. So I just, you know, rocked up and I didn't have any food. Because my dad's like, yeah, don't worry, they'll have a catering. And they were like, no, you're just going to be, we were taking your own food down. Yeah, you know, if you've not got packed lunch, you're going hungry. And we were taking down like this huge, essentially kind of scaffolding structure.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, what time do you think we'll be finished? And they were like, well, stop asking questions and hurry up. And when it's done, and I think we, you know, we worked from like 6 in the morning to like 9 o'clock that night. And then went and stayed at this, like, it wasn't Airbnb because this is previous to that, but like stayed at some house the company I was working for had managed to rent. And there was like no bedding or anything. And I was like laying, and I hadn't taken a towel with me. I hadn't taken like a towel with me either because I assumed we'd be staying in a hotel. So I remember that night, I've gone off on such a mad tangent.
I love it. Keep going, man. Keep going.
I remember that night, I was so sore. From just like lugging all this stuff for like 16 hours up and down this grandstand. Bear in mind, you know, I've been training for a long time at this point, but this was completely different. It's like nothing I'd ever done. This is not like 21s with a barbell. And I remember getting out the shower and just looking, there's no towel. And I just felt so dejected. And I got my shirt that I've been wearing all day and kind of dried myself off the shirt and just went and laid on this mattress and just thought, what have I done? And like I say, that was 10 years ago. And up until this
year, you stayed with it.
Like I say, if I wasn't in Liverpool, I would have gone home. But wow. I stuck it out. And then the Olympics came up and I, you know, had a good project management kind of hands-on position at the Olympics. And at the other end of the Olympics, I'd kind of fostered a really good network of people I knew in the industry. And it made sense. At this point, my brothers were working for the same company as well. I've got a couple of younger brothers. It made sense to me to start my own business. And again, I thought like, well, you know, I'll start my own business and events and I'll have lads that go onto site and then I can get back into fitness.
Right.
You know, and anyone who runs their own, I think people have this idea that you run your own business and you work for yourself, but you don't, you work for everybody else. And you're bottom of the pile. And there was no real like, turning point. I was still doing the remote coaching. I was still writing. I was still doing bits and bats. My own training was like slim and none. It was just like classic, like some press ups, some running when the motivation struck me.
Bare minimum.
Yeah. And I remember one day, I believe I was in a hotel on the M4 services in Bath or near Bath. And I was like, I've got to sort this out. Like I need to train. And I sat with it for a while and I just literally said to myself, like, look, dude, you've got all of this like professional education in training. You understand the principles. You understand how these things work. Why are you sitting here saying you can't train? Yeah. And that night I just went outside. I went out to the fire exit of the hotel, like the staircase. And I just started doing push-ups and pull-ups. And I had a piece of rope. It was like a cut off from a piece of rope for work. This ratty bit of rope, and I was doing it. I think I did like an EMOM of push-ups, pull-ups, and skipping in the balance of each minute. And I thought, well, you know, write that down. And then it kind of spiraled from there, and it became a bit of almost an experiment to see like how far can I get back in shape, like, you know, what I would refer to as shape for myself.
Yeah.
Just out, you know, outside these fire exits in 20 minutes of an evening or 20 minutes at lunchtime.
Savage.
And then, you know, pretty soon I felt good. I felt good anyway, because my job was on my feet all day. You know, I was ticking those boxes, the physiological boxes for exercise. So I was getting all of that. And then it really was initially just kind of an aesthetic thing. I want to look like I work out again. Got to a point where I was fairly kind of happy. You know, a really physical job, so huge calorie expenditure.
Yeah.
You really don't have to think about your diet all that much to kind of, you know, to kind of maintain a caloric sort of maintenance. So I carried on doing that, and it was almost like a research mission. And I was looking at what works, what transfers really well to minimal kit or no kit. And, you know, I picked up a kettlebell, just to add some resistance, and I had some bands to do some accessory stuff. And I was just trying, I'd go through phases of looking at, well, let's take this program and let's take this method. Can I backwards engineer that to work with nothing, with no kit at lunchtime, out the back of my van? And it kept escalating and escalating and escalating. And then I was like, can I do a CrossFit style competition? Can I do a strongman competition? Can I run an ultra race? All of this stuff out the back of my van while I was traveling. And I guess that's kind of my niche, kind of my story. That's it really. That's who I am. I guess that's what I do. And it kind of, oddly enough, this year, where everyone else is kind of in this situation of having minimal equipment and being back in that position I was in 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I've actually ended up, you know, there's no events, so there's no events industry, so I'm not traveling. I've actually ended up with more kind of kit and more gym access than I've ever had. Yeah. it's just a great irony.
That's unreal, yeah. Fair play. So, like, you're obviously running your own business. You're working for Men's Health. You don't take being busy as an excuse for not getting your workout in and whatnot. Where did this, like, hard work ethic come from? Like, where was your exposure for that? Was it your folks? Was it that gym you worked in when you were 16? Or is it something you just kind of developed over time?
I don't know. This is not a pop of the terminology you use there, but it's not a case of like no excuses for me. It's kind of like, do I want to do this thing or not? I think a lot of people have things they want to do and then they construct their own excuses. And a lot of the times they are just, you know, they're paper thin because there's people all around them doing way more than they are with many more reasons not to do it. And one thing I don't like to use the word loathe, it's a bit strong, but I'm not really big on this like hustle culture, this idea of like, yeah, no excuses, just get it done, because I just don't think that washes with a lot of people. A lot of people perhaps need someone to say like, cool, look, if you don't want to do it, that's absolutely fine. But if you do want to do it, here's how to do it in your situation. Because I think a lot of times that idea of like, there's no excuses, you just don't want it enough. That can actually entrench people a bit further into their position. In terms of like actual work ethic, I don't know. I don't really think about it. I don't really consider myself. It's not something I think about like, oh yeah, you know, like The Rock, I'll always be the hardest worker in the room. All these like cliches.
They don't really cross my, they
don't really cross my mind. It was just a case of, I honestly believe that curiosity will always trump kind of motivation and discipline. And for me, that's what a lot of this has been about. It was never a case of, oh man, I've got to get back in shape because I'm X percent body fat, or I'm so weak, or I'm this, or I'm that, or I've got health issues. It was just, can I get back in shape? And I don't, a really prime example is sometimes, so say at work, we might be on site from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock at night. In that time, the boys will have a bit of breakfast at say 10 o'clock and then lunch at 1 o'clock. So 10 o'clock, if I'm training for something in particular, sometimes I will divide my session into an evening session back at the hotel car park and then a quick lunchtime session or a break time session at 10.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, not this, oh man, I've really got to get out and do my training at break time. It was like, oh, I wonder what the most efficient EMOM I can do here is. And it, you know, it was as easy as that. There was no real thought of work ethic. I do want to do the best of whatever I do, but that's out of curiosity, and that's out of, I think, maybe just not leaving any room to look back and go, oh, you just didn't do that because you couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
As you know what I mean? I think a lot of people build their own excuses, maybe a strong word, but they build their own barriers by looking at what other people have got that they haven't got. And that's, you know, that's kind of the, to me, it's kind of a backwards way of looking at it instead of looking at what you can do.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know, that might sound a bit wishy-washy and a bit kind of like, oh, good in theory, but not good in practice. But really, I think it's the only way to be good in practice is look at what you can control.
100%. Yeah, it sounds a bit wishy-washy, but then you can come back and say that because, well, you started with a hotel fire exit doing pull-ups, skipping rope without... It's not like you went and bought a 50-pound skipping rope off the best market, like whatever it was. You just started, and then, like as you said, you were able to add a kettlebell or whatever it was. And on top of that, I think that's magic. It's like, and yeah, I like what you said there, saying about hustler mentality and everything. Like it obviously doesn't apply the same for everyone, but it's more, would I be annoyed at myself if I didn't do this because I think I can. I think that's really, really awesome.
Yeah, I think it's like, get out of yourself a little bit. Get, you know, separate from yourself. Be objective and look and say, like, you know, why am I triggered when I see a celebrity getting in really good shape? Is it because I'm looking and I'm actually genuinely thinking, well, it's because they're rich and they've got a chef and they've got a personal trainer? Or is it because actually I really do know that I could actually do that? I think people look for the examples most distal from themselves, most different, the people with the lifestyles least comparable to their own, so that they can say, well, yeah, sure, he can do it because of X, Y, Z. And they will then have the blinkers on and completely ignore the woman sitting next to them in the office who's got three kids, but works out five times a week, eats a great diet, does the same job, but they'll completely ignore that person. Because the truth is, if they look to that person, they would see exactly what they need to do. And it's much easier to look at the person who is so far away from your lifestyle. Yeah. Just to go. And I can't remember who I said this to the other day, but looking at what someone else has got and using that as a reason for why you can't do anything is like saying that you will never have a car because a Lamborghini exists. Like, don't worry about the Lamborghini. Worry about what you can afford. Like, you don't need to be worrying about the thing that's so far off. You know, I can't swim because millionaires have got super yachts. It doesn't make any sense. Just worry about where you're at and what you can do and look for kind of inspiration, motivation, and information from the people closest to you. And I think I find it really cheesy when people say they've set out to inspire, because I don't think that's possible. I think you just need to do whatever you're doing. If it happens, it happens. But part of this might sound a bit preachy, but part of the obligation I felt once I started, especially once I started kind of documenting what I was doing on Instagram, is I looked at it as I had years and years of professional training and education under my belt. And there's other people in exactly the same situation I am. And so, you know, they've got kids, they can't get to the gym, they work mad hours, they're tired once they finish work, but they don't have the luxury that I have of being able to go, well, you know, you can use this movement pattern instead of this piece of equipment, or, you know, use this modality to get this. And then I kind of saw it as not necessarily an obligation, but maybe something I should do to document this stuff and back engineer it, my findings into a format that I could go, try this. This is going to eliminate, you know, to use that parlance, like, this is going to eliminate your excuses.
Yeah, that's deadly. I think that's awesome. I heard a good quote recently, and it was just simplify and share. Like, don't take what you're doing, break it down, and then tell the people who need to know. And like, that's clearly what you've done with your training and your Instagram. And I suppose that makes it, I talk to like a few people I work with and a few people I know, and they're like, oh, how can I create more regular content on Instagram that like appeals to people? And I think that's like what you said, that's the wrong way to do it. Like, do what, show what you're doing, and the people who need to hear it will come to you, and you'll just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And your Instagram kind of shows that. A word you mentioned there, and I don't know what sort of answer I'm going to get off you from this, but like you said things like inspiration and stuff. Like, where's your inspiration lie? Like, what do you look towards? Who do you look towards? What keeps you going every day? What's the big goals in that?
Like, curiosity. It really is, yeah. Curiosity. I'm at that point. Like, you know, I'm perhaps once upon a time there was what I believe to be like a big end goal, and if I'm honest, it was probably very egocentric, and it was probably possibly revolved around look good, win this, be the best at this, you know. I'm not an overly competitive person. I never have been. I wasn't raised on competitive sports. I don't like football. And in England, if you don't like football, like, what's left? It's just like, you're just hanging around on street corners and like doing graffiti. That's all that's left for you. I'm not posh enough to do rugby. So I just, you know, I was just a toe rag, so I'm not particularly competitive now. And there probably was people I aspired to be like, but perhaps not in a negative way, but perhaps for the wrong reasons. Now what inspires me is, as I say, it's just curiosity. Like, at the end of the day, I'm going to be, you know, Lord willing, touch wood, I'm going to be training forever. I'm going to be doing some form of exercise forever, because, you know, why would I've been doing it for too long, and I understand the benefits too greatly to go, no, I'm just not going to do that anymore. So I'm going to do it forever. So that this idea of like, what am I looking to do has kind of changed as I've got older to like, well, what am I looking to do now? You know, what am I going to do with this thing that is exercise, that is movement now? And it's all kind of, like I said previously, like, it all just feels like a big experiment to me, particularly, you know, from a coach's point of view, and from someone who's very curious point of view, and someone who does remote programming, writes, you know, for mass media, this idea of discovering how can I do X with Y, or, you know, what's the most optimal way to do this using only this, or do this with only this time. All of those things, they just really interest me. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm really fortunate to have the platform I have and be surrounded by the people I'm surrounded by to be able to say, like, I've got this idea. Let's find out if this is, you know, I'm doing something else right now with me. Let's find out with you if this thing is tangible and this thing works. And that really is, in terms of, there's tons of people that I aspire to be more like in certain aspects. But I think, and I had a great chat with Logan Gelbrick about this the other day, like, there's no model. I'm not trying to, I don't want to be a CrossFit guy or the strongman guy or anything like that. I'm just having fun, really, and trying to do the best version of whatever it is I'm doing at the time. And I genuinely think eventually that does trump motivation and kind of discipline, because when you're curious, you get that itch and you want to scratch it, and that
you want to do it anyway. Yeah,
you want to do it then, right? And I think if anyone listening, if you can actually think about that, think about the times you've been motivated to do something versus the times you've been motivated to find, sort of curious to find something out.
Yeah,
and motivation comes and goes, but curiosity, that's that itch where you sit there and you go, no, right, I've got to find out.
I love that. Yeah, that's kind of what we see a lot of, I suppose, in CrossFit gyms, like people who first come to us and they're like, oh, what is this? Like, where's all the machines, and how do you still do the stuff, and like, what are the rings for, and all that sort of stuff. And that's definitely the appeal initially. But then we also get the other side of that, where once people have done it and they've seen how it happens, they're like, yeah, but what's next? And that's where stuff like what you're doing with the strongman stuff and keeping it minimalist and all that. That's where the questions come in, because that's kind of happened to me in the past since lockdown as well. Like, I have a few of your ebooks, and it's like I've started doing the Stoic 30 one again, just to be like, well, yeah, can I still keep my shape and keep my fitness without having to do all of this other stuff? Or can I just, and I bought the, like, I have the straps as well, and it's like, can I get away with doing carries, sprints on a machine, and some push-ups and squats, and that's it? And I think that curiosity is probably the best word to describe that. With your training then, like, on that stuff, do you have any structure to it? Like, or how do you structure it? Is it just kind of what I feel like today? I know you're not training for anything at the minute, but generally, do you just kind of go out and do whatever tickles your fancy?
No. I think I do a bad job of actually not explaining, but kind of espousing my thoughts on things. Because when I'm actually training, I talk all the time about, yeah, try this and try that and have fun with this. But my own personal training and how I prescribe training, I couldn't be further away from the idea of just kind of going out and doing willy-nilly training. I do think there's room for it within your training, but in terms of, yeah, I'm like a real programming like geek. So for me, yeah, everything's structured. Once I have something in mind, or actually even when I don't have something in mind, I will still fall into a template. I think I've been doing it, you know, I've been in industry for like 16 years, exposed to a lot of stuff. And, you know, eventually you'll know, you start to see what, you know, the patterns emerge, what's going to work regardless for, yeah, whom and for, you know, for what goal. So my training is like very much template driven, and the other variables, weights, movements, you know, modalities, time domains, they'll all change depending on what my goal is. I think if I'm not training for anything in particular, I will still fall back into a structure, which that could just be something like, you know, I might just alternate an upper day, a lower day, and a long form conditioning day. And I don't really think about days of the week. This comes from working in events where some days I would literally not be able to stop. Like, there would be no lunch break. We just, you know, you just work all day. And then some days you are just so beat up of an evening where you're like, I'm not, you know, I've had nights where I've got back to the hotel and I'm filthy and I've just laid on top of the bed and not woken up till the next morning. So training just didn't happen. So I think you can get into this sort of neuroticism if you're like Monday, Tuesday, rest, Thursday, Friday, rest, Sunday, active recovery. Whereas I definitely prefer to, and I, you know, prescribe the same way, which is like, write your 30 sessions for this block and let the rest days fall where they may. Because there's nothing, you know, it's annoying if you say Wednesday is my rest day, so you don't train, you felt good, you might, you know, you're not even at work, you felt good, you had all the time in the world, but it's your rest day, and then Thursday
you're off the
wall.
It's
time to get back to it. Life happens. Yeah, life happens. You know, you've got to go to the hospital or whatever it may be. And you're like, oh, why did I take that rest day? So I just let those fall where they may, according to mood, according to recovery. I know, like, now I see tons of people are really big on HRV and got their Whoop band on, and they're letting their phone tell them when they should and shouldn't train. Now, whether the technology, that, do you know what I mean? That technology could be 100% infallible. I don't know enough about it. I've looked. I understand that it only takes one mistake in like the algorithms these devices use to calculate this stuff to really like kind of mess you up, like give you the,
yeah.
But for me, like, why are you outsourcing that? Like, do you feel good? And after, I don't know anyone that's been in fitness for sort of longer than 5 minutes that won't be able to tell you a story about when they came into the gym feeling like absolute just dog and pulled a PB, or went into the gym, like feeling like everything's spot on. My sleep's been good. You know, I'm not stressed, blah, 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 blah. Everything's great. And for some reason, the empty bar feels like a ton. It just happens. And, I've gone a bit off tangent there, but in terms of like programming, yeah, I'll fall into one or two templates and then I build everything around there. That is, I think sometimes when I talk about training really freely and openly, I'm not clear enough that I don't really articulate that whatever I do, it will fall into one of these kind of training templates, but that's by proxy of having done it for so long, you know?
100%.
I
love that, because that's everything you've said there is kind of something that I talk to my clients about. And like the one where you mentioned, it's like, well, how do you feel today? Like, if you feel good, I might have prescribed a rest day for you on True Coach or whatever, but if you feel good, just go train. Like, don't let training dictate your life. Like, don't get upset if you do miss a day. Like, your training should, for most people, shy of professional athletes, training should complement their life and just make their day better, their week better, and all of that. And then the same thing, like you said about the whoop, like I had a whoop for about a year and I got rid of it because I got to the stage where first thing in the morning, what I did was check my phone to see how I felt. My phone. Yeah. And I was like,
to see how I felt.
But I know how I feel. If I get less than 6 hours sleep, I feel tired and sluggish. If I get more than 8 hours sleep and I've ate really well the day before, I usually feel pretty fucking good, shy of life happening, big training session the day before. It's like, but if I just, the more I rely on the technology, the less of that awareness that I have. And everyone does the same. And I was aware that I was doing that. And then it just got to the point where I was like, cancel. No longer, like it was controlling everything, and it's just, like you said, it's ridiculous. It's not necessary.
I'm not kind of completely against it. I mean, to play devil's advocate, there are a lot of people, and you would have worked with some who cannot tell you like how they slept.
Yeah,
you know, you could work, but they don't realize, they're just not cognizant of that. Oh, I actually didn't eat a single thing yesterday. And I slept for 4 hours. And some people just, they don't realize that, like, their life is, they're so kind of, their lack of awareness of self and their own habits is so kind of, I mean, none of us would have jobs if everyone was really like aware of what they're doing and knew how to optimize, right? And sometimes the whoop and that sort of thing can be the catalyst for actually understanding those, like what changes need to be made. Because there are some people that don't really realize. And I'm, you know, it's easy for us to say, as people who have an understanding of the human body and live this, it's easy for me to sit here and say, that's nothing you can't do with a paper and a pen, write down how you feel. But for a lot of people, that, and it can be the buy-in, right? It can be the buy-in for them to go, I'm investing in my health.
This is it. Yeah. It can be, the word you use there, well, catalyst. I think that's absolutely perfect. It can get the ball going and it can provide a bit of guidance as to, maybe I didn't sleep good last night and this is how I feel. But the problem then arises whenever they go, I can't train today because my Apple Watch says so.
Yeah.
That's the big problem.
It's finding the balance, isn't it? That's kind of that paralysis by overanalysis where you can, you've got to take the good and be kind of transient enough to go, well, you know, the whole reason when kind of whoop, kind of, I remember I got someone offered me a whoop band, I got offered, would you do a review of it, blah 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 blah, and I was like, dude, I sleep 4 hours every night. I know what it's gonna say. Like, I don't need that level of negativity in my life. What do you, when it's 9 o'clock at night and I've just pulled into like Woolly Edge Services in North Yorkshire and I've got my barbell out, and if whoop was personified and I say, hey man, I left house at 4:30 this morning, I've been on site all day, I'm just gonna do some what's it gonna say? It's not gonna be like, this seems like a good idea. So I think it can be great. I think I've come kind of full circle in this in my life. I felt very happy and I felt like we were really getting on to getting into a good space when evidence-based became this huge thing. I felt like the pendulum was swinging in the right direction. Here we go. Excellent. People are going to, you know, start paying attention and a bit of awareness to the actual science behind this stuff. But there's science is very binary. Something either works or it doesn't. And it doesn't leave any room more often than not for the human factor. Yeah, exactly that. Curiosity and the fact that look, you and I both know, I finished training however long ago. Habitually, I have a protein shake now. Now, I'm not bothered that I haven't done it because I messed up and I didn't realize that I was late to this call. I'm not bothered that I haven't done it. But for some, it's fine. I know that there's there's no hour and a half anabolic window and I need to get in there while my muscle protein, it's not important. But for some people, that habit, that ritual is what keeps them tied in to their training. And that might be, you and I both know that it doesn't really matter as long as your total protein over the day, over the week, over the month is where it should be.
Good.
Yeah. But for some people, that 30, 40 grams of protein is that might be a third of their intake for the day, and not getting that's quite a big whack. And it's not to say that there's nothing special about protein supplementation, but the human factor of building that ritual and building that kind of investment, it's a big thing. It's a really big thing. And I think to become an evidence-based ideologue where you can't see anything other than, and I don't even mean what the research says, what the guy on Instagram who you presume knows the most about this stuff says the research says, which isn't even the same thing, right? And you actually end up with a trickle down effect where the guy at the bottom who is, he's got evidence based in his bio, doesn't actually even understand the evidence because he's just going off of what this other guy said. And he's ended up, that's when we lose really important things like for weight loss. Yeah. That's a key for me. That's a really key two, three words that end up, by the time we get to the last guy, the last evidence-based coach at the bottom of the pile, he's forgotten that this, we're actually talking about weight loss. And now he just believes it, just complete nutritional sort of nihilism where nothing really matters, nothing really works. And none of this stuff really accounts for the fact that actually buying that tub of protein on January the 1st could be the catalyst, like you say, for someone to actually make, take the step forward. Is the protein in and of itself important? Absolutely not. It could be replaced with anything.
The story behind it can be so important. Yes.
Exactly that. And I actually hate the thought that a lot of people are going to end up losing that buying, losing that kind of, this sounds like I'm selling protein here. I've got no vested. I'm not even sponsored by anyone. I hate the idea that we could lose that kind of element of buying, of storytelling, of creating the culture that can actually be really important because someone put their ring light on and did a face to camera video saying you don't need protein. These things are nuanced and there's room for everyone. I get it, and I think those guys are doing a great job of counteracting the guys at the other end of the spectrum who want to tell you that you absolutely positively do need to buy this protein supplement. But I'd like to hear more from the middle, of saying cool, if that helps you feel invested in your training, have at it. Absolutely have at it.
Yeah, I think that's, absolutely spot on. But then middle of the road doesn't really sell, and that's kind of the problem we run into. Something you were kind of alluding at there then with like the catalyst to doing stuff, and obviously the climate we're in now where everyone is training at home. Like, say someone does need that thing to get them going and they want to buy something for their home to train with, like what, and you do have an affiliation right here, like what is your go-to recommendation? So like for the listeners, if they're going on the Bulldog Gear website, they can buy one thing. What would be your first recommendation?
Go to the link in my bio. Make sure you get it through my affiliate link. Right. So I would say, and my opinion on this is has changed. Like initially I would be quite hard and down the line. And I did a program with a free program with Bulldog where essentially this is pre-lockdown where we looked at, if you take the money that you're spending on a gym membership and just every month invested it in a new piece of kit, how, you know, what would you do? And the idea of it, funnily enough, was to build yourself a little home gym arsenal should the situation ever arise where you can't get to the gym. That was kind of
it. Unimaginable as you were doing it.
I literally been told, my Stoic 30 guide, which is like learn how to use one piece of kit just in case you're ever stuck with one piece of kit. I literally had people say, no, thanks. Why would I ever not be able to go to the gym? And I was like, shit happens. And here we are.
Buy my book.
Yeah. But I would say, kit-wise, first and foremost, buy the thing that interests you the most. Buy the thing that you think is the coolest. And I literally mean that. And I don't see any problem with that. If you look at guys using kettlebells, and you're like, those guys look cool. Or you look at like the strongman guys throwing around the sandbags or throwing around an Atlas ball and you think that looks cool. That looks like non-traditional, it's kind of counterculture. If that's what gets, you know, if that's what puts the wind in your sails, buy that piece of kit. I would say if you are completely like type A personality, you don't feel any emotional way towards anything, my go-to recommendation is like, you're going to buy one piece of kit, just buy a single kettlebell. If you are going to buy, if you can get two pieces of kit, buy double dumbbells. I just think a single kettlebell works better than a single dumbbell. It depends what your goals are. And I think a double dumbbell probably brings more value than a double kettlebell or a sandbag or an Atlas. I think sandbags are great because they're the cheapest way. If you're pretty strong, they're the cheapest way to go heavy. 100 kilos of sand, just sand, you can get for a tenner. The same weight in bump plates is going to cost you a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Right. But overall, I would say buy the thing that you think you're going to look at and think, I can't wait to train with that. Like, I'm so excited to get this thing because we all have it. I think particularly as we like things. We like new things. And I'm exactly the same. Whenever I get a new piece of kit, I'm like, what can I do with this? How much fun can I have with
every
this?
Day?
Yeah, exactly that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I got a new set of farmer's handles. So I'm like, right, how heavy can I go on these? Or, you know, I think the thing you're most curious about or the thing that excites you the most is the thing you should go for if you're only going to buy one piece of kit.
I think that is a fantastic answer. For not giving a direct answer, that is on the money. Really, really spot on. That's, I love that. Dude, I think that's a great place to leave it. I love it at that. If people were to go searching for the Andrew Tracy, where would you find yourself? Where's the best place to go? You can plug every and all platform that you have.
I think just Instagram. I'm theandrew.tracy, Tracey, and then you can find everything from there, really. I guess it's a great platform from that point of view. This has been an absolute pleasure, mate. I've thoroughly enjoyed this.
Yeah, mate, I actually loved it, and I think there's some golden nuggets. I'm gonna have to listen to this one back to decide what they even call it. It's magic, man. I think you have a really good way of articulating your point. And then I like the way we had some points where you just play devil's advocate on it as well. I think that's I think there's, for the scientific community, like what you were saying too, if more people could do that, there'd be a lot better solutions and probably less extremes with what's going on in the fitness industry at the minute. Andrew, man, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.